Production. Recorded live.
Greetings and welcome to Hour of Discernment. This is Walt Stickle, your host for the next 45 minutes. This morning, I want to make just a couple announcements. I'm moving my up 1 hour, so we're going to, instead of when I'm broadcasting 5 days a week, it's not going to be at 8 o'clock, it's going to be 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Well, listen, I'd like to get into a little bit of scripture before I introduce Larry Phillips. Larry Phillips, we're going to be talking this morning. Larry Phillips, we're going to be talking about Phillips versus the State of Missouri, a compelling case of religious discrimination. Larry Phillips' refusal to license and place children with sodomites, his victory over the State of Missouri. I want to start with some scripture. You know, and first of all, you know, before we start this discussion and interview Larry, this is a quote from Arthur Pink. Who is regulating the affairs on this earth today, God or the devil? Now, I want to take us to Romans, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like a corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creepy things. This is the verse I want us all to understand what this verse is saying. Romans 1:24. Wherefore, God also gave them up to an uncleanness through the lusts of their heart. I want to repeat that. Wherefore, God also gave them up to an uncleanness through the lust of their hearts, their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. I'm going to skip down now to Romans 1:28, for, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do the things which are not convenient. I just want to have this fresh in our minds before we start this interview here. So anyway, good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
And I'm sorry I'm a little bit late, but I have an electric clock with a battery, a weak battery. So
okay.
So anyway, when you first shared this with me, and then you sent me a short little booklet. We learn in waves. And this is a very compelling story, which is the truth, and it relates to the times we're living in right now in 2016. So with that, Larry, could you share your experience with us? With this court case?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I will say, I want to preface before I begin to tell the story. This was 20 years ago, 1996. And so a lot has happened in the last 20 years, as you know, Walt. And because of the lapse of time, those 20 years, Larry Phillips has changed a lot too, okay? And I'm sure Larry Phillips will change a lot the next 10 years. So we're always,
changing daily.
Yes, and God is working in our hearts. But anyway, I had worked in many different social work positions prior to getting my position with the State of Missouri. I worked for the state of Kansas in an agency in Olathe, Kansas. I work for another agency in Leavenworth, Kansas, primarily providing services to, you know, persons who were on the fringes of society by the account of many people, people in foster care, people who had been involved in abusive homes and that kind of thing. And I had now the credentials to apply for a position with the state of Missouri, and I took a position and ended up licensing and overseeing foster homes in Jackson County, Missouri, which is in Kansas City, Missouri area. And I had done that for some time, and I went in on a regular day, and my supervisor asked me if I could come into her office. And so I went into her office, and she said, "Larry, I've got some news that I need to give you. We're having some policy changes within the agency, and you need to be made aware of it." And I said, "Okay." And so she said, starting effective immediately, we are going to be licensing and placing children with homosexual foster parents." And, of course, my body language and my countenance must have been very apparent, because she said, "Do you have a problem with that?" And I said, "Well, Kathy," her name is Kathy Collings, I said, "Kathy," I said, "I, you know, I can't do that. I said, I, you know, that goes against my particular religious beliefs." And I said, "You know, if that's the way, if that's the nature of, you know, where the agency is going, I guess I'm going to have to formally request that I be placed in a different position, you know, be assigned to a different position." Thinking that was, you know, the best response I could give her, and she became enraged. I mean, she became really upset. She began to tell me that if I would do it, and I had no choice in the matter, and that if I didn't do it, I would be insubordinate to her directive. And within about 10 to 15 minutes, I was called into her supervisor's office. And her supervisor, Rosalind Wilson, began to go down the same route, you know, really berate me and tell me the nature of my position required that I do things that I'm directed to, whether, you know, whether I agree or disagree with them or not. And within a day, the state divisional director of the whole state of Missouri came down to Kansas City from Jefferson City and called me for a meeting with him personally in his office and began the same tirade. Well, to make the long story longer, basically, this began at about 6 months of absolute harassment. Many of the people on my floor, which is the third floor of the state office building in Jackson County, were about 30%, I would say, realistically, were very much out of the closet practicing homosexuals. And they began to barrage me. And one of the supervisors there, his name is Mark Cheney. By the way, this is all a matter of public record. You can find this in the court case. It's public record. But Mark Cheney, who was a avid homosexual, and he was a member of an organization called ACT UP, began to taunt me. And he began to come into the office in full-length leathers, leather vest and leather pants, and he had a baseball bat in his hand, and he would smack the ball bat in his hand in a threatening manner, looking at me as if, "You need to shut up or you're going to be taken care of."
Larry, did you ever taunt them?
No, I was just barely trying to, I would just say, you know, you guys, you know, You're welcome. You know, your lifestyle is your business. I'm just merely standing up, you know, for what I believe, and I just can't do this. Mark Cheney became so enraged that he took saliva-soaked sunflower seeds and threw them all over my desk in my office area, and I was working on the placement desk one day to find a place for a little infant child, and he came over and asked me if I'd found a place for this child yet, and I said no, and he said, well, I know a place that'd love to have this kid. There's a pedophile conference going on in Kansas City right now. They'd love to have that kid. Things like that, just to try to push my buttons, and it had a toiling effect on me, and I asked to be reassigned many times, and to just kind of condense this down, I had heard of a gentleman, his name is Jay Sekulow with the American Center for Law and Justice. He's probably one of the top attorney firms in the United States that takes cases on religious discrimination, Title III charges. And he had a little booklet that he put out, How to Document Religious Discrimination in the Workplace. And so I just started going verbatim by what, you know, Jay Sekulow suggested to do. I just documented everything. Every time there was an incident of harassment, every time there was a snide remark, every time there was discrimination against me for my religious beliefs, I would document it and put the time and the date. Well, anyway, it got really, really bad. And so, you know, I was told by the American Center for Law and Justice that I needed to file an EEOC claim, which is Employment Opportunity Commission of Religious Discrimination. So I called the EEOC and told them I wanted to file a formal religious discrimination complaint. Well, when they came out to the state agency, of course, everything went crazy from that point, because the EEOC interviewed me and interviewed all the parties, and the EEOC, with their evidence and research, decided that I had a proper claim, that I was being discriminated in the workplace, and I had the right, because they have to grant you the right to sue the state of Missouri, because the state of Missouri and any state generally has, they have certain rights that other people don't have. I won't get into all of that. But anyway, when the state of Missouri found out that the EEOC had granted me the right to file a lawsuit, they really turned the fire on. They immediately moved me to a different position, trying to cover their tracks in Independence, Missouri, Trumantown, in an office there. They put me in sexual abuse investigations, but they put me with one of the best friends of Mark Cheney in that division. And this supervisor started to harass me. And she assigned me to do a hotline call on a foster care that was in a lesbian home. And when I went to this hotline call, this little 8-year-old girl came out of the house and started pouring her heart out to me about how she was fearful of being in this foster parent, the lesbian foster parent's home, because of the kind of sexual activity going on in the home. And so I just documented it all and turned in my report, and I was called in the office and just literally told to remove my report from the record. And of course I refused to do it, and I won't go into all the detail. I have a son who has a brain degenerative disease, and he was going through a lot of things at the same time that this was happening, and my family was under a lot of turmoil because of this. And so I had some vacation time coming, so I thought this would be a good time to take some vacation time, have a little cooling off period. So Rosette, we went up to Yellowstone Park, and when we got back, I was only in my office for about 4 minutes, and I was approached by my supervisor, and she told me that I had been terminated and that I had 8 minutes to get all my stuff out of my office or the Independence Police Department would be called. I mean, total harassment. And this was all, you know, just unbelievable. Well, anyway, what I didn't realize is, as a result of that specific day, it had gotten in the press and it got in the Kansas City Star. And then it got, then the 700 Club, Pat Robertson got wind of it. And then, of course, Jay Sekulow called me and said, I'd like to take this case. You've got an excellent case of religious discrimination. And I tried to argue with him. You know, I told him, you know, my dad taught me that you cannot fight City Hall. And he said, you need to shut up and listen, Phillips. He goes, I've been on the Supreme Court 21 times, and I've won 18 times, and I'm telling you, you've got a good case. So I succumbed, and we filed a federal lawsuit against the state of Missouri. And when you file a lawsuit against the state, you're not just filing a lawsuit against the state, but you're filing a lawsuit against the Attorney General of that state. And that, at that time, the Attorney General is now the current governor of Missouri, Jay Nixon. Jay Nixon was the Attorney General at that time, and now he is the governor. At that time, Governor Carnahan was the governor of the state of Missouri, and he had an office not only in Jefferson City, but he also had an office two floors above my office in Jackson County. And he was very, very pro-homosexual. And it was time to, for him to rerun for governor again. And during this case, he went to a homosexual political fundraiser for him. It was all homosexuals, and they gave him lots of money. And he took off, his plane took off with his son in it from that homosexual meeting, and he crashed, and both him and his son were killed in that plane crash. And this lawsuit was in the new federal building, federal courthouse in Kansas City, brand new spanking building, all the security. Now, I did not enter the federal courthouse without going through tremendous screening every time. And the jury selection was a three days just to find a jury that would, they could, they thought they could get to slant in their favor, you know. And Jay Sekulow sent a battery of attorneys up to represent me, some of the top attorneys in his organization, one of which, the top attorney on there was Francis Mannion, who ended up doing the foreword to my book, by the way. And Francis Mannion was, you know, it's interesting, and we can cover this later. I am not at all... I don't agree at all theologically with Roman Catholicism. I'm not much against it, but he happened to be Roman Catholic. And he represented me in a very, very unbelievably high constitutionally academic manner. This case went on and on and on and on for 5 years. This case went on, and I could go into all the intimate details about the case.
Comment, Larry?
Yes.
When it goes on for 5 years, is it the same jury?
Yes, it's the same jury, and it was just like these people were just worn out. I mean, they just
could the jury go home?
The jury were sequestered. Originally, what happened, though, is they went home between different because as the case moved up in the federal jurisdiction, because it went from the federal level up to actually the highest level in the state of Missouri, and it was, you know, and so between these court dates, they could go home. But while the court was actually in session, they were sequestered, and they were put up in motel rooms. And So I don't know how much you want to get into the actual case. You know, I have been, in fact, my attorney in the book says that I had the longest deposition of any court in the state of Missouri. It was a 24-hour deposition, and I was absolutely harassed for 24 hours in this deposition.
Can I stop you here?
Yeah.
You're talking 24 hours without sleep?
No, it was a 24-hour deposition. It was, I think it was 3 days, 8 hours each day.
Eight hours? You know, in other words, it was for 3 days.
Right.
Don't you think they were using the tactics to try to wear you down?
Oh, no question. No question. And, you know, I've got in my book a couple pages of the type of questioning that went on, you know. And if anybody, by the way, if anybody that hears this broadcast, you know, if they email Walt and Walt emails me, you know, I'll make sure you get a PDF copy. If Walt has a PDF copy and he has my permission, and I'm not in this for money. I'm in this just to let the people know what went on. But
Larry, I think it's time, you know, we hear news stories and we understand the sodomite, you know, and we are living in a country right now that sodomy is legal. And I think it's time for, you know, this is reality. What Larry's telling you is reality. Harassment, you see, sodomites are reprobate minds. They lack totally. God has given them up to a reprobate mind. And they're very militant. And we see that, and when Larry says that 30%, now could you explain the 30% of that?
Well, the third floor of the state building was primarily people who were involved in the foster care and adoptive care and placement of children. And as you probably have heard, you know, homosexuals on both sides of the aisle, both male and female, both lesbians and males, gays, tend to, you know, gravitate towards children. And there is a correlation between pedophilic activity and homosexual activity. And that's why so many homosexuals like to get in places like teaching, foster care, adoptive care, you know, school bus drivers, coaches, anything to do with children. Now, a lot of homosexuals will blatantly deny that, say that homosexual activity has nothing to do with pedophilic activity, but I beg to differ because the research spells it out that there is a higher incidence of child sexual abuse among homosexuals than any other of the population. And pedophilic behavior is much higher in that population. So it's just a matter of doing your research on that. But yes, they're very militant. In fact, Mark Cheney was so militant that he was a big promoter of AIDS awareness, and he didn't feel like the city of Kansas City was doing enough on their AIDS awareness program. So he got so angry that he took what he said was AIDS-tinted blood in a vial, a glass vial. He went over to the city council chambers and threw it all over the desk of the city council while they were in session, by the way. And you know, nothing was done. He was not arrested. It was in the paper that, you know, he threw AIDS tinted blood all over the council chambers, but nothing was done. Now, what if we had done something like that? What if I had done some kind of a militant kind of a thing, which I don't believe in militant activity, but it just shows you the distinction.
Well, it shows, you know, we are in a fallen state, and the only good in us is Christ that lives in us.
Absolutely.
And so this is a good example of 5 years, and God's children, God's elect children, should really listen to what happened. Not that you're right, wrong. It's just reality of where we are in 2016. And 6 out of the 9 chief justices, Supreme Justice of the United States, are Catholic. And they voted in same-sex marriage. Not going to go down this path right now, but everybody knows the pedophile problem in the Roman Catholic institution. But let's keep that in the back of our mind, you know, as you continue. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, as I was saying, the thing that really stood out in this case, and I often have asked myself the last 20 years, I think it's a very ordinary response, you know, why me? Why did God pick me to be a representative in this particular endeavor? Because had I known what I know now, I probably would have taken a totally different position. Most of the people that represented me and were supportive of me were rank Arminians, free willers. And I don't want to get into that, but I can tell you that those people today don't want to have anything to do with me because of my stand on election and predestination. I don't want to get into that, but that's another subject for another time. But I want to just give the audience an idea. I think I have it here, if I can pull it up, an idea of the kind of people that were supportive of me during this process. And I have to scratch my head and I go, where are those people today? I mean, they were... But what it was is that this was a very popular case from the religious right stand, you know. I mean, it was like, oh, now if this case were going on today, there's no question I would probably be locked up and I would be going, you know, I'd be on the other side. But God in his providence chose to intervene for me. And, of course, I think about that. But anyway, I want to just, in the book, I give thanks to some of these people, like for an example, and you'll recognize some of these national organizations. The Coral Ridge Ministries, that's Dr. D. James Kennedy. Of course, he's dead now, but a lot of people don't know it, but the Coral Ridge Ministries was dedicated by Billy Graham. That church was dedicated by Billy Graham. The American Family Radio, Don Wildman. Don Wildman is a national, and his son now, they have, probably over 100 radio stations, and I was, you know, on Don Wildman's program. The Moody Press, you know, the Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson, you know, he mentioned me in some of his books and stuff. And the Baptist Press, you know. And the only reason I'm pointing this out is that, you know, you can go on Jay Sekulow's website, and Jay Sekulow used to have my whole case outlined on there. Because, by the way, according to Francis Mannion, who was a top attorney, the Catholic attorney that represented me, he indicated that to me that because of Jay Sekulow's fundraising activities around my case, he put a lot of money off of my case, a lot of money, because he had my picture on there and telling the story about the little kitties and, you know, and all this. The Christian Broadcasting Network, 700 Club, Pat Robertson, you know, Alliance Defense Fund actually put funds into my case. They actually helped fund the case with the American Center for Law and Justice. Alan Sears wrote a book, and in his book, highlighted my case and so on in there. But where are these people today? They're not. They don't want to have anything to do. In fact, my case was taken totally off of Jay Sekulow's. And why? Why? You say, well, why did they turn on you, Larry? Because I no longer... support the doctrine that we can circumvent evil of our own free will. In other words, just like the first thing that Walter read on the program, who is regulating the affairs on earth today, God or the devil? God is the one that allowed this to happen. We don't understand all of these things. We're still supposed to take a stand against evil. And I had a number of congresspeople, you know, at that time, Congressman Connie Searpoy, Congressman Dennis Bonner, Congressman Don LaGrasso, Congressman Pat Kelly, Congressman Delbert Scott, who I actually went to school with, Congressman Bill Kinney, Congressman Glenn Hall, you know, St. Louis Metro Voice, Kansas City Metro Voice, Family Research Council, Peter LaBarber, you know, and I was on a lot of radio programs and stuff. And you know, I was like the little celebrity, you know, the little Christian celebrity, you know. But the real, the thing that amazes me through the
whole thing. Could I interrupt here just a little?
Yeah,
what I want the listeners to understand where Larry, and we're not going to go down this path right now, but he mentioned Arminianism, free willism, and election. And tell me the reason why, I mean, I think what I want us to all understand, it's because of the reason why they left you at the end is because of your doctrine.
Right, my doctrinal change. I was raised Arminian. I was raised in the free will doctrine, the free will of man. And I read the book that you read, the Sovereignty of God by Arthur Pink, and I began to study the Bible, and I found out that God works all things after the counsel of His own will, and it's not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but God that showeth mercy. When I talk about the Sodomites, I have to say, and Walt reminds me of this often, and we kid around about it, but Larry Phillips is a great sinner. I mean, but by the grace of God, there would I be. So I'm not puffing myself up saying, you know, ha, 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 I won over the Sodomite. No, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. God just chose to intervene for me and my family and on because of this situation. But I'll tell you what, we're all born and conceived in sin. And apart from God's grace, we are of all men most miserable. And so that's why when I started, in fact, the book, as I was writing this book, God began to reveal his election to me during the writing of this book. And you'll see in the last chapter of the book, I proclaim God's sovereign election. And it's where my mother currently still goes to church. They asked me to come and speak at the church. And I was going through this change, and I thought, you know what, I can't say anything about predestination or election or the sovereignty of God in this church. They'll throw me out on my ear. So I went in front of the church, and I gave my story just like I'm doing today. And, you know, they wanted to see my book because they had a big camp meeting going on, and they wanted to promote my book. And the screening committee got a hold of my book and read the last chapter and said, we can't allow this in this. We can't allow this book in the camp meeting. And when they told my mom, I'm sorry, but we cannot allow your son's book, Phillips versus the State of Missouri. Even though we support your son in this case, he's doctrinally, you know, this is not good. And so they refused to allow me to place my book. Yeah.
This is something that is slipping by. I mean, you know, we know dispensational futurism is a real, it's been a tool of Rome, and it's turned the light off of Rome. But something that's going on here that I want people, that's the reason when I started this broadcast, I said we're going to cover Arminianism, free willism, and election. Because This is I would say, the second big division. And until we understand this, that it works kind of hand in hand with dispensational futurism.
Oh, absolutely.
And tell me if I'm not stating this right. But Arminianism leads to dominion theology.
Absolutely, it does. And a lot of people ask me, well, Larry, you know, because they know that I was ingrained in Arminianism. They ask me, you know, where did Arminianism begin? You know, of course, I have to laugh, because the philosophy of Arminianism began before the world began in heaven, when Lucifer said, "I will arise and be as God," because that really is Arminianism, is putting yourself in the place of God and saying, you know, this is my choice. I determine my own destiny, and so on. Well, as a result of that, we have people like Pelagius and Jacobus Arminius and Charles Wesley and you know, a number of people down through, you know, Billy Graham, and then we got Charles Finney as the one that really promoted this. And then you have people come on the scene that realized, and we won't get into all the Jesuitical influence, but the Jesuits, priests, began to say, if we can get people to just go along with the free will of man, then all we have to do is change the end time events to get people's minds off of Roman Catholicism and the Pope, and on just a specific little short 7-year period of time, to think about one particular individual, and then Rome will be scot-free. And that's exactly what's happened. And hence we have the State of Israel and the Six-Day War and the proclamation of the rebuilding of the temple, reinstituting animal sacrifice, and it's already been paid for. The veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and Christ on the cross said, "It is finished." And so this is all a lie.
And like I said, we're not, you know.
I didn't mean to get off the subject.
Well, no, because that's good, because this is where it's coming to the end. I mean, you know, and we'll do another broadcast tomorrow, and we're not going to get to the end.
I just didn't want to, maybe you want to leave tomorrow. Tomorrow I can cover, actually, which is really quite a miracle in itself,
yes,
how the case ended. Because I'll be honest with you, the last day of the case, I really thought we had lost the case. I thought the jury was so mind-controlled. Well, they had been mind-controlled by the witnesses and by this homosexual elite. I really thought I had lost the case. But God had something else in mind, and I'll share that on tomorrow's broadcast.
Well, one other thing that I wanted to mention. I've mentioned it several times on the broadcast about a book. It's called The Foundations Under Attack, The Roots of Apostasy by Michael DeSemblin. And before anyone that's listening makes any, you know, judgmental of what Arminianism and what freewillism is, they need to understand the history of Arminianism and understand where it came from. And this book, The Foundations Under Attack, is the best one I've ever come across. I mean, it gives you the eschatology, the history of where we're at today in 2016. Because the reason for Larry sharing this testimony, the main reason, is God is still sovereign. And we're living in a fallen state. And then the more that you open your eyes, when you think what Larry said, 30%. Now, I'm like Larry. would never taunt anybody. If somebody is a sodomite, and understand when we talk about the sodomite issue, I mean, people think to be a sodomite, it's the sexual act that makes you a sodomite. Listen, people that condone sodomy are sodomites.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
I mean, in other words, we're not going to taunt it. It's not up to us. But the thing that Larry went through in this case, and what, I mean, they were just, I mean, they were trying to trigger you. All you'd had to done is break one time. And with repercussion. And this is a lesson for all of us, is because, you know, Larry, you did disengage. The carnal mind, when some of this stuff was thrown in your face, you did want to react.
Yeah, I did. I mean, the natural man, you know, you know, if anybody wants to do any research on, you know, on the issue of free will and the Arminian thing, you know, you can go. In fact, there's a lot of people that, you know, because Augustine took a very sovereignty of God position, while Pelagius took the opposite position. And if you want to go back in history, you can. Both of those came up with a different conclusion, one based on the Bible and one based on humanism. The same thing with Luther and Erasmus. But the thing that I want to point out is that if you go to the 5th chapter of Romans, it goes through the whole scenario about how we were born and conceived in sin through Adam. In Adam, all died, and in Christ, all of God's elect are made alive. And so that's another subject. But the thing that Walt made a point is about is that a person cannot deny. In other words, there's no maverick molecules. If you believe that there are maverick molecules, in other words, if you believe there are two kingdoms, there's Satan's kingdom and God's kingdom, and they're on equal par, no. God is sovereign over Satan. Remember the incident of Job? I mean, Satan had to get permission from God before he laid a hand on Job.
You know, and Larry, I want to repeat what I started the broadcast with. It's Romans 1:24. Wherefore
right.
God also gave them. God. Now, why
right.
not Walt Stickel?
Right, right.
That's not Larry. Let's read that. Let it soak in. Wherefore God also gave them up to an uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts.
Right.
And then you go down to 24. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind.
Right.
God is still sovereign.
He is sovereign. And if he wasn't sovereign, he wouldn't be God. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, it goes back to how we started the broadcast, is who is ruling the affairs? Is it God or the devil? I mean, the reality of it is Lucifer is a created angel. He is a non-elect angel. And there are elect angels and there are non-elect angels. There are elect people and there are non-elect people. You know, I mean, you can go back to the 9th chapter of Romans and it says, hath not God, you know, hath not the potter power over the clay to make one vessel unto honor and one to dishonor? What if God, willing to show his power, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted for destruction? And he said, for this very purpose have I raised Pharaoh up, that my name might be declared throughout the whole earth. So, yes, God is sovereign. And by the way, God has already won the victory. When he was on the cross, he said, it is finished. He came to save his people from their sins. And there are two people on the face of the earth, and you can find it in Revelation, where it says that the the goats are on the left side and the sheep are on the right side. And the who are the sheep? Well, the sheep are the ones that their names have been recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life from the foundation of the world. So we didn't have anything to do with being recipients of God's mercy. That's why we can't boast about it, you know. We can't boast about it. But
for by grace we are saved.
Amen.
Not of ourselves. It is a gift of God. And, you know, the reason why we're going to finish up with tomorrow, we're going to finish up here now. We're doing an hour broadcast today, and we'll do the rest tomorrow. We'll finish. But, you know, understand, you know, this was, people say, well, do you believe in election, Walt? I didn't know the doctrine. I was out on the truck listening to the Bible over and over and over without any minister or anything. And I can, people say, they want to debate me. And I said, I don't know for you. I can't be you. But I know God chose me. I didn't choose
right.
God. God right. grabbed me by the nape of the neck and in with a good shake many, many times before I realized who was, you know, that I was a servant of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
And so, you know, this is a real touchy subject with people, but understand it's one of the big, you can talk about dispensational futurism, and we know what dispensational futurism has done.
Absolutely.
We understand, but Arminianism and free willism connect right in the middle. And I'll tell you, this broadcast is called The Hour of Discernment. You know, and God is teaching us, you know, to discern between good and evil through His Word, through the Holy Spirit. But this is a touchy subject with people. People don't want to go here. First of all, you say this, and you're a Calvinist or you're a hyper Calvinist. But you know, I started this broadcast, and you know, if we only have an audience of two people, it isn't about. I don't have any sugar daddies.
Neither do I.
You know, I mean, in other words, but this is a dividing line, because when these ministries have people contributing to their ministry, they have sugar daddies, and and if they don't talk the line, their resources, their money dries up. It's called marketing.
That's right. That's what I was alluding to about the people that were so supportive of me until my biblical doctrine came to the surface. They all, you know, took a hike because they knew that they couldn't get funds from someone out proclaiming the sovereignty of God.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Arthur Pink himself was a good example. He was an itinerant minister, and he started, and by the way, I have Walt to thank for this, but Arthur Pink started in the Moody Bible Institute and came out and even was promoting futurism for a while and dispensationalism. And then as his doctrine began to change and he began to study the Bible, in the last few years of his life, he had to actually leave the United States and go to Scotland. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with him in the United States, period. He couldn't get any preaching engagements or anything. Why was that? Why all of a sudden the change, you know? So,
yes. And see, it's no surprise. It's no surprise for, you know, this is the dividing line that, no, I mean, people see some of the, we see it, there's the apostasy, but when it comes to Arminianism, and by the way, we're going to be going over this book, and we're going to understand and learn the eschatology of Arminianism and where it started.
Yeah.
And it comes back to Rome.
And you know what? Isn't it interesting today where our society has come. I was just sharing this with Walter about a week or so ago. I have some connections within the Southern Baptist, convention. Do you know that the Southern Baptist Convention has now, in certain elements of their council, has approved the ordination of and acceptance of homosexuals into their church? And now we see the same thing in many, many churches. The Episcopal Church now ordains homosexuals. And the United Methodist Church now is leaning towards the ordination of homosexuals. And so it's come full circle, and that's what happens when you start worshiping the creature rather than the creator, So I appreciate the opportunity to share my story, Walt.
Yes, well, I think it's not going to be a popular story. People hear the whole story. But we'll continue, and we'll do another hour tomorrow and finish up, and we'll talk. Because it really was. You can see the hand of God, that God intervened on this court case. You can see the hand of God. It wasn't Larry.
No, in fact, I tell people, the judge on this case, she was the most liberal Bill Clinton appointed judge ever, but she ruled in my favor. Now you figure that. Go figure.
And we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yes.
Because it's taken me. I've read the little booklet, the PDF files. And by the way, if anybody sends me an email, I'll send you the PDF files of this court case that Larry. I wanted you to understand why, after all the religious right was totally jumped on board with him, but as soon as they found out that he was Arminianist, that was when they all dropped him. That's when they all dropped him. So when you realize that something is being demonized, that's what you want to read.
I will share one little blip. There's a guy in Kansas City. He's very well known across the world, really. His name is Richard Dick Bott. Dick Bott, Bott Broadcasting. He now has, I think, 40 Christian radio stations throughout the United States. I've been on his radio stations, his network, 3 or 4 times. He called me his friend and so on. And then he wanted to have a meeting with me. I had a meeting with me, and he started talking about Charles Finney. And I said, Mr. Bott, I cannot endorse Charles Finney. Or anything that he denied the substitutionary atonement of Christ and so on. Well, before this time, he was going to set up for me to go on a nationwide speaking tour with Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis Schlafly, is very well known in the Christian community. But you know what? After doing some research, I found out that Phyllis Schlafly is a Dame of Malta. I didn't know any of this. And God intervened. Can you imagine if I'd been going on the worldwide nationwide circuit with Phyllis Schlafly speaking at Eagle Forum, and here she's a Dame of Malta?
Man. Well, see, this. I'm glad we stopped kind of in the middle of the broadcast.
Yeah.
And you covered you, because I was going to want to do it at the end. But we have to understand how the religious right jumped on board. It's real important. I got a list in this PDF file of all the ministries that jumped on board with you. But man, as soon as Larry made a stand and didn't agree with Arminianism, boy, they were gone.
That's why I can so relate to Walt Stickel's favorite saying, being thrown under the bus.
Yes. They threw him under the bus immediately. And if anything, we understand when it's, I always use the same analogy with Judy Wood, who wrote the book, Where Did the Towers Go? When I found out that they were, that Alex Jones and the 9/11 architects were demonizing her, man, now we know there's something in that book.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying, and we'll close with, is when you understand that how the religious right is demonizing Arminianism, you better look into it.
Yeah.
You know, you better. Why are they demonizing Arminianism?
That's right.
Because one of the reasons, I'll tell you, it doesn't fit marketing.
Yeah.
It doesn't market. And that's probably the main reason. You know, that's how they build these big.
Well, I mean, just look at the Arminian organizations. Look at Focus on the Family, a hyper-Arminian. I'll use the word hyper-Arminian. I mean, he was a Nazarene, but Dr. James Dobson
was a Freemason.
Yeah, and he was raised up in psycho-heresy. He had bought into the psychology. It's not even science. It's pseudoscience, and he was promoting it in the Christian world. And then you look at Don Wildman. Don Wildman is United Methodist. He subscribed to John Wesley and all of his denial of original sin and free will doctrine. So, yeah, these people that are Armenians, why can they have worldwide ministries like this? Why can Billy Graham have the national multi-million dollar Good Samaritan's purse and all this? You know,
it's called the Billy Graham Crusades.
Yeah, and the Evangelistic
Crusade
Association.
So when you,
yeah.
that word crusade should give it away. But in other words, it doesn't, because we were uneducated and we didn't know our history. We're not taught about the Dark Ages. We're not taught about the Inquisition. And we're not taught about the Crusades. The Christians were, it was the Christian Crusades.
Absolutely.
No, it was the Arminian Crusades.
Yeah, and these Crusades, a lot of them were, you know, that's another good point you're making, because I remember hearing a guy say just yesterday, I thought it was really good. Actually, it was on your show. It was Greg. He said, you know what, the first thing I want to say is a lot of people have a misunderstanding of what Christianity is, and let me say what Christianity is not. Christianity is not Roman Catholicism. It's an oxymoron in terms.
And Christianity is not Arminianism.
No, it is not.
So with that, you know, Larry, God bless. We'll see you tomorrow, same time. And I'll put a battery in my clock here and try to be on time.
Okay, have a great day, Walt.
Okay, God bless. Bye-bye. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Bye for now.